on campus
and online.
This
is URN.
So before we get into our discussion of the TikTok CEO who is currently giving evidence in front of the US House Select Committee on Energy and Commerce, we have a special guest, and I call him a special guest because he's that equivalent on the Thursday Pulse now.
I would argue that I'm no longer a special guest. I'm returning rightfully to my place as co-host, because who am I? Well, dear listeners, if you're unfamiliar with who I am Ben Thomas Mellor, known simply for being a little old sort of little, just a little guy.
I have no little guy.
But I'm known as the head of news of URN, finally back after taking a hiatus due to reasons, where my lovely deputy Scarlett Ponton has been fulfilling a God's work. But no, I'm back. I'm ready.
Did you just describe yourself as God, Ben?
No. So I've been saying, I said that Scarlett's been doing God's work.
Yeah, but you are the head of news, and Scarlett's been doing your work.
The work that you were previously doing.
Either way, I
didn't know your middle name was Thomas.
Now you do. But either way, as much as we sort of have a nice laugh and a joke, I am very glad to be back. So, listeners, I hope you're glad I'm back, because I will be back.
So, Ben, what is your thoughts on what is currently going on in the US? So, to recap, what is your position on TikTok data breaches? How much should the... what could be the Chinese government know about our personal lives? Do you care? Fun with it.
I mean, it's quite interesting, actually, because I sort of am one of the very few people on Earth, dare I say, that didn't actually have TikTok for the longest of times. And the reason I didn't have TikTok is because of that sort of half conspiracy theory-esque idea of sort of the Chinese government.
I've never had it, Ben. I'm just putting that out there so you're not alone.
Thank you.
Okay, let's do a quick ranking round room. If we just go from... So Ben now has TikTok for reasons.
I now have it because I needed it for a campaign.
You're welcome.
Yes. And I've had it since February of 2020. Ali, how long have you had TikTok?
I don't have TikTok. Or right. I have a TikTok that I very, very, very occasionally use. I'm not sure if it's installed on my phone.
Mark?
I've had an account since June 2021, but I've only really downloaded the app again in the past few months.
Rachel?
And I've only uploaded
I'm gonna
the first thing in the last
Rachel's
week.
I'm going to be shocked by Rachel's answer.
Do you want to guess how long I've had it for?
August 2019.
Earlier.
When did it come out?
I do know, because I now have sort of your... I now have your personal TikTok, and I know that you've had it since at least sort of sixth form secondary school time.
Earlier.
Yeah, which would have been about that time.
No, but she had it early, like at least 4 years.
I had it before it was TikTok.
You had it since Musical.ly?
Yeah. I was a proper Musical.ly person.
When did Musical.ly become TikTok?
So Musical.ly became TikTok, I think, in 2018.
Okay.
I want to say. I loved Musical.ly. I made three videos a day, 0.5 speed.
I can see
so
that.
Good.
But do you also believe that like Musical.ly was a weapon of the Chinese Communist Party, as the committee chair Kathy Rogers has stated today?
I just lip sync to songs, man. It's not that deep.
See, the wording of that,
or is it?
To take it sort of political, the wording of that is interesting, because I sort of alluded to the fact that I didn't have TikTok for the longest time because sort of my worries of sort of, you know, Chinese government control. And, you know, I certainly wouldn't go so far to say, oh yeah, they're using it as sort of an indoctrination weapon. But quite simply, I'm just sort of uncomfortable with the amount of data collected from TikTok. And the Chinese government has used sort of many internet sources to collect people's data, and it has been used to repress sort of protest movements. And I think that this, you know, just on principle, that's why I haven't had TikTok. But, you know, if you want to sort of go so far to say it's a weapon of the Chinese government, then that is your right.
Yes, and that bit about the protest, so apologies if I mispronounce, but it's just come up recently that the TikTok CEO has avoided the question about the Uyghur Muslim minority in Western China, and how people had been putting up videos talking about the what is often called a genocide against the people in China, and how these videos constantly keep on getting taken down. So yes, there is a comment, you can make a comment about how you feel about your own personal data being used, because TikTok knows an incredible amount about us, all with the algorithm and everything. But especially that I do a protest movement, you could sit there and you could say, I don't care about my data being given to the Chinese government as an individual, but what about what they're doing in terms of suppressing information about arguably a genocide?
This is a tricky one, yeah, because it kind of leads us on to the field of general, like, data sharing and stuff, and there's the resident sort of computer science student here. Obviously, it's something that I occasionally, like, wonder about in terms of the extent to which individuals can truly control how much of their personal data is going to a lot of these companies. Because obviously, behind the scenes, no matter which social media companies that you're with, they're all going to be selling their data to data brokers who are all going to be selling them onto each other. And sooner or later, like, no matter what you're on, you know, it's going to reach the Chinese state or the Russian state or whatever else, or private companies XYZ. So I find it intriguing just to see almost how much of a big deal is kind of being made about this by individuals. Obviously, I understand it from the perspective of government, state organisations, broadcasters, things like that, whose kind of job it is to kind of be almost as in control as possible over where their data is going. But on an individual basis, I find it intriguing because, you know, there's a lot of people who, you know, on, if you're on like any number of social media, then your data is going to be with them anyway. It just depends on how directly you're giving it to them. But also, I think with TikTok, I wouldn't be surprised if in the next like year and a half there's another Cambridge Analytica type story with them. And if that happens, I'm also very intrigued to see the response, because as I kind of did an essay in the URN news group chat earlier about this, the Facebook and what's it called? Yeah, the Facebook and TikTok use demographic is very, very different in terms of age, and generally that age does indicate like how wary you are of companies having data and stuff. So if there was another story like that with TikTok, I don't know if the TikTok demographic would be as caring as the Facebook were when the Cambridge Analytica one came out.
I mean, it's interesting because obviously thousands of internet companies collect your data. You know, when sort of you click accept cookies when you go onto websites, that is a process of collecting data. And the thing is, I've, for a period of time, actively tried to not just blanket accept on every website I go on, but the problem is it's near impossible. It drives you insane.
It's tiring. Yeah.
You click more information, then you've got to click through like thousands of different tick boxes. It's just not feasible to protect your data.
And sooner or later, you get to a point where it's like, oh well, you know, they've already got a load, so why, you know, might as well click accept. And whilst I've kind of said that before is a kind of quite a tricky viewpoint for people to have as to where it's going and whatever, it also does raise a question about that kind of Cambridge Analytica type situation, where we're getting to the point now where almost a lot of people are being forced into mass acceptance that this is the norm. I mean, and that they're not going to care.
I mean, it's interesting because after the Cambridge Analytica scandal, there was simply not a seismic sort of shift in legislation from governments. And Cambridge Analytica, all of the information and all of the sort of profiteering from people's data that they rightfully or wrongfully collected, I think wrongfully, you know, all of that difference, all of that impact that it had, and yet nothing changed. And this is the thing that I think we're going to see with sort of the hearings in the US that are ongoing at the moment. There's been antitrust, anti sort of hegemony hearings into companies like Google, into companies like Microsoft, Facebook before, and yet nothing's ever came of them because sort of the tech, because US politics is very much driven by money, at least from my perspective as an outsider. And these companies simply have too much sway over US politicians. And I think as a result, despite these hearings going on, I personally don't think we're going to see any change.
And equally,
I don't think either, because like if you think about Trump, I believe that Trump was elected because of social media, the way that he communicated his ideas. Yes, there was already that apathy amongst the American working class. Yes, he appealed to blue collar voters in the South, but equally the way he got his message across to those people is through social media, in a way, as he could sort of say, oh, we're all the same, you know, this person with in a huge amount of wealth and power was able to appear like the common man through the use of social media. And it's quite a thing in the modern age of it. I think it's both one of the best and worst things about the 21st century.
I completely agree, because you can, with social media, it's very easy to, you know, frame yourself exactly how you want other people to see you. You know, but before social media, you had to meet someone in person, you know, and hear the speeches of politicians to understand what they stood for and everything. But, you know, like you were saying with Trump, he was able to create his own personality. And it's so, I think it's, like you said, it's useful because it can help, you know, voters feel more connected to politicians if they're, you know, because they feel like they're talking directly to them. But I also think there is a danger that you can just, you know, just craft yourself as, you know, whoever you want to be. And then, well, look, Trump got in the White House and he wasn't exactly the man of the people, was he? No, you know, and is back on Twitter now, as far as I'm aware, isn't he? I think I'm right.
Yes, though not active.
No, okay.
Yes, we won't get into it, but social media is a very, very complex world and way more important than politics, and I think sometimes is appreciated.
Let me tell you, do not write a dissertation on it.
That sounds like a horrible. Why?
If you do want to know the title of my dissertation, dear listeners, for your own personal curiosities, it is Analyzing the Effect of Twitter. Right, I'll get back to you after the break because it has slipped from my mind. But
great stuff.
We'll get back to it.
Yeah, obviously, Ben's dissertation is going wonderfully as he can't remember the title. We'll just give him a couple of minutes to, you know, remember his own dissertation title.
Take care.
We're on campus and we're online.
We're online.
University.
Radio.
Nottingham.